What up, Free Market Squad? This is Anarchopreneur, episode number 28. I think this one's going to be called Shortcuts and Shiny Objects. Here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What governments should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism, God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, Free Market Squad? Welcome to another exciting episode of Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. Today is Sunday, May 15th, 2016. We are broadcasting on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV. Also picked up and rebroadcast over at LRN.FM, and you can also get archives of this show over at the new website, NathanFraserShow.com. I am Nathan Fraser. This is Anarchopreneur. You, more importantly, though, you are the Free Market Squad. Thank you for taking an hour out of your time this week to hang out with me. I do appreciate it, and I promise to make it worthwhile, especially today. Today's episode is going to be jam-packed, full of very valuable information for you. Later on in this episode, I'm going to be talking about shortcuts to success. That's going to be the prominent part of the second half of the show today. I'm also going to be talking about some things that we can learn from the current political atmosphere, from Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, and why they're so appealing. And just give some of my thoughts on that. But before we get into that, though, I am going to talk a little bit about Nathan Fraserland. Nathan Fraserland is, of course, my own little serialized life that gets put into, I try and condense the last week of my life into 15 minutes for the podcast listeners. Just kind of keep you guys up to date with what's going on in my life. Obviously, a lot gets left out, but I try and take the high points and the low points and put them into this little section at the beginning of the show to let you know what's going on in my life. So right now, I don't know if you're on my email list or maybe you're not on my email list. Maybe you've got a little bit of hint of what's going on. Maybe you don't. But my living situation is kind of up in the air. I thought I had it figured out. A lot of stuff's been going on. I was told that my living situation was going to need to change. I figured it out. Now I've been told it needs to change again. Don't really want to get into the details of it, but as of this moment, I'm not sure where I'm going to be at in the next couple of months. So it's probably going to be difficult to be doing live shows, at least for the next couple of months. I'll try to constantly put up weekly episodes. I'll try to have a new show every single week for you guys, but whether it will be a live episode or not, I'm not exactly sure. It's going to be difficult to make that possible. So that's kind of just a little bit of a heads up, but I will figure something out. I'll figure something out. I'll be okay. I'm not too stressed about it. I was earlier this week, but so I'm starting to come to terms with what's going on, and I'll figure something out. It'll be okay. As far as Podcast Blast Off is concerned and our service Blast Pod that we provide for podcasters over at Podcast Blast Off, slowly but surely, we did get a new customer, and I promised that I would introduce this new customer to you guys, the listening audience, and I wanted to make sure it was okay to promote his show with him before. Obviously, somebody's going to be like, no, I'd rather you not promote my show. Cody Wilcox does a podcast called Waking Life, and yeah, okay. it is out there. It's actually, I really enjoy it. It's one of those shows where he cuts up a lot of different audio. It's kind of like an audio collage show. My first introduction into podcasting, when I first started listening to podcasts, one of the first ones that I did was by one of the guys over at Tragedy and Hope. Used to have a show, I want to say it was called Eighth Estate, and it was like 8-hour-long podcasts, sometimes 12-hour-long podcasts, just deep dives into a particular subject. I think the first one that I listened to was about 9/11, and it was just like 7 or 8 hours of audio of conflicting stories about 9/11 or things that maybe you didn't catch in the news that conflicted other official stories about 9/11. It was just a really deep episode. And then it obviously had some conspiratorial aspects to it, but it was like one of those episodes that took 3 or 4 days for me to actually make it through, listening at like 1/2-hour increments at a time. Great, great podcast though. I don't know if it's still up and, still being produced, but it was called Eighth Estate. I think the second episode of it that I listened to was all about the origins of Santa Claus. And it dived into like, the mushrooms, the magic mushrooms being red and white and stockings being hung to dry out mushrooms. And, in the Nordic history of the Santa Claus mythos. And it was a really good episode. And that was kind of my first introduction into what podcasting was. And, that is kind of reminiscent of what Cody does with his podcast, Waking Life. I'm halfway through his second episode right now. Both of his episodes have been incredible, and they kind of take that same approach where he takes some of his input and also has a bunch of just kind of like an audio collage on particular subjects. And his aren't, I don't think they're quite as long as Eighth Estate was, but his episodes average about 3 to 4 hours long each, and just tons of really thought-provoking audio content. So go and check that out. I think his website is wakinglife.co, and you can check out the first two episodes of his podcast. Now, this is amazing to me. His first episode got over 500 downloads when it was released, and that is an incredible start. Like, I am just dumbfounded by that. I've often talked about when I first started podcasting, my first podcast, I think it was like 8 downloads in between when we launched it and when we released the second episode. I think the second episode got 12 downloads the first week. So to watch Cody's podcast blow up and get 500 downloads for the first episode before he released the second one, just an incredible start. I'm super proud of him. And, I want to know what his secret is. But I mean, it's also testament to the fact that like podcasting is way, way, way more popular now than it was when I started. Podcasting is blowing up. It's becoming way more mainstream. I think close to like 50% of Americans listen to at least one podcast a month now. Whereas when I first started podcasting, it was like very rare that anybody had ever even heard of what a podcast was. So, the adoption of podcast applications on smartphones and, iTunes getting into the podcast game, and now Google is getting into the podcast game, and even Audible is trying to start up a podcasting platform. Like, podcasting is, it's only going to continue to grow. And if you've been thinking about getting a podcast, I would highly recommend, for my own self-serving purposes, you go and check BlastPod out. That is the service that we provide for podcasts. That's what Cody has been using to host his podcast. Last week's guest, Chris Jansen, also uses our service podcast, or our service BlastPod, over at Podcast Blast Off. Also, Drew Sample for the samplehour.com or samplehour.com uses BlastPod as well. I'm really loving what, I love the product. I love what other people are doing with our product now. So, yeah, if you're thinking about starting a podcast, highly recommend go over to podcastblastoff.com, check out BlastPod and see if it's the service that's right for you. I would say that it probably is, but that's because I have a vested interest in getting your money. So, take that for what it is. But just a heads up though, I am going to be having Cody on in the near future, maybe next week, maybe the week after that. I want to have him come on and plug his show, tell you about what his show's about in more detail than what I just did. And I'll also tell you, I want him to tell you his story about how he was able to use Facebook ads and other social media platforms to grow his audience so incredibly fast. I think that I'll be able to learn something. I think that you guys will be able to learn something from that story. And what he was able to do on a very tiny budget by using Facebook ads, and I'm sure he probably used his Instagram account as well to grow his podcast platform or grow his podcast audience so quickly. I think there'll be some valuable lessons in that as well. So in the very near future, I will be having Cody Wilcox on Anarchopreneur. God, I messed that one up, to talk about his show and talk about how he was able to use Facebook ads to grow his audience. Just incredible. A great story. I'm so proud of his success. Lastly, in Nathan Fraser land and podcast blast off land, we got some, speaking of Facebook ads, we got some new landing pages built for sending traffic from Facebook to podcastblastoff.com for opt-ins. Now, I guess a little bit of framing for the story so you guys know what I'm talking about. Opt-ins are basically a way to grow your email list. You give something away to people for free in order to get them on your email list. Once they're on your email list, you use your email list as a way to communicate with people, as a way to let them get to know who you are, what you can provide, as a way to constantly provide value for them, and as a way to kind of build a relationship and then eventually, hopefully, turn them, convert them into paying customers. And that's what we've been using our email list for. And we've been having maybe not a little bit of trouble, but we've had some setbacks due to Facebook ad policies. I spoke a couple weeks back about how Facebook's constantly changing their policies for how landing pages need to act and how like the rules of what you can do with their ads platform. So as marketers, we're constantly having to change the pages that we're sending traffic to through Facebook ads. And so recently, Facebook has been kind of getting a little bit more strict on some of their policies. And so we had to change the landing pages that we were sending people to as far as where we were sending people to opt in from Facebook for our mailing list. So one of the things that we had to do is we have to include a privacy policy and a terms of service link in the landing pages now. It used to just be a landing page. So the way that it used to be, the way that we used to send people to, we would send people to a landing page that only gave them one option. It was, you click on the ad, you go to this page, it tells you what you get, and the only option that you have is sign up for this opt-in. So sign up for this free course, sign up for this free PDF. There was no navigation off of the page. There was no links to our privacy policy. There was no links to our terms of service. It was just, here's what you came here for. Put your name and your email into this box and click submit. I guess that's a horrible word. We usually don't use submit, continue or get resource or whatever. But now Facebook is no longer cool with that. They want your pages to actually look like an actual page. They want you to have a home button. They want you to have navigation buttons to other pages of your website, which is really bad from a marketing point of view. When you pay to get somebody to go to a page, you don't want them to leave that page before they've taken the action that you paid for, before they've converted. So having a home button and having links to other pages on your site, not really optimal for marketing purposes, but Facebook wants those there. Also, having links to your terms of service and your privacy policy, I kind of agree with those. I think that you should have those available. But again, it's another button for people to click and to move away from the page that you paid to send them to. So I can see why marketers are not super hip on it. But we weren't doing any of that before. Now Facebook has changed their policies, and so we had to redesign our landing pages. So now our landing pages have all of those links in them. We'll see how that works out. Also, one of the things to make sure on your landing pages, just a kind of a side tangent, it's really good to make sure that your landing page is consistent with both the feel of your website. Our landing pages used to not really be consistent with the feel of the rest of the website. But now they look like an actual page from the rest of the website. Also, they need to be consistent with the ad. So if the ad that you're running has a particular image in it and it promises a certain thing, once they click on that ad and they go to your landing page, it's really good to make sure that you're using the same color scheme, that you're using the same images, that you're making the same promise on that landing page that you did in the ad, because if people click on it and then they get to a page that doesn't look like the ad that they clicked on, doesn't have the same type of feel, doesn't have the same color scheme, they're likely to click back. You'll get high bounce back rates. That also tells Facebook that there's probably something wrong with the page that you're sending people to. Maybe you're pulling a bait and switch. Facebook doesn't like that. Really, users don't like that. Anybody, I mean, if you've clicked on something and once you got to the next page, it wasn't anything like what you expected it to be, you don't like that, do you? So don't do that to your potential customers. It's not a good experience. And then the last thing that we had to do, last little bit of Nathan Fraser land, the last thing that we had to do on our new landing pages is we had to update for the new Facebook pixel. Facebook is going through and updating all of their pixels. I think next month, the old Facebook pixels will no longer work, and everybody's got to be switched over to the new Facebook pixels. And we use Facebook pixels for a couple of different reasons. Number one, for retargeting. So if you land on our page and it shows us that you've been to our website, you're familiar with our product, then it lets us know that you're a little bit warmer than a cold audience. You may be a warm audience, maybe a hot audience. It lets us know that our advertisements to you can be a little bit more, a little bit more than just a, hey, nice to meet you type greeting, but more of a, hey, how are you doing? Let's catch up type of advertisement. So we use Facebook pixels to track, and I know this totally sounds like I'm working for the Illuminati and the NSA, but it is what it is. If you guys are going to put your information out there, I'm going to take advantage of it. Makes me a shill. That's okay. As you can tell, I definitely have an internal conflict about this, but man, it is what it is. We talked about this actually in depth in last week's episode with Chris Jansen. But yeah, if you come to the site, you get pixeled if you have a Facebook account and Facebook says, hey, this person went to your website. And it doesn't tell us specifically who you are, but when we run ads, if we're running ads for a warmer audience, we'll pick only people who have been to the site. And the way that we do that is by putting a pixel up in the header code of the website. And whenever you go, whenever you're a Facebook user and you go to our website, Facebook tracks you and says, hey, this person's been to your website in the last 15 days, or this person's been to your website in the last month. And then when we run an advertisement, it allows us to say, hey, only show this advertisement to people who have been to the website in the last 15 or 20 days or 6 months or whatever we want to set it to. So yeah, it's a little bit invasive, but if you're on Facebook, you should kind of expect that. And it doesn't give me any information over you, but it does take advantage of the information that you volunteer over to Facebook. So I'm going to use it. And the last little bit of this rant is the last thing that we did in Nathan Fraser land and Podcast Blastoff land is we made sure that we have the Facebook tracking pixel on the landing pages. When you click on one of our ads and it sends you to a landing page, there's one type of pixel there, but we also have a conversion pixel. It's called a lead pixel on the thank you page. So if you do opt in, if you do decide to follow our advertisement to one of our opt-ins and you don't opt in, it lets us know, hey, this person visited your site, but they didn't trigger the second pixel, which means they didn't actually join your mailing list or opt in for your freebie that you had offered. But if you do join our mailing list, then on the thank you page, after you put in your information and you click get my freebie now or whatever it is, enroll in my course today or whatever, once you go to that thank you page, there's a second Facebook pixel that is a lead pixel, and it lets us know, hey, this person did convert. So when I'm running ads specifically designed to get more people on my mailing list, I obviously don't want to show those ads to people who have already opted in for my mailing list. So if I'm running a new advertisement, I don't want to waste money and pay twice to show the advertisement to somebody who's already opted in. I want to make sure that I exclude those people, and that's how I do it. We put a lead Facebook pixel on the thank you page. That lets us know that these people are already leads, and when we set up our ads, we say, hey, we want to target everybody who's been to the site in the last 50 days, but we don't want to include people who have already become leads. So exclude anybody who's triggered the lead pixel on the thank you pages, and only show this advertisement to people who are not already on our mailing list. So that's kind of what's been going on. That's what we've been working on the Podcast Blastoff website. That was, maybe that was my weekly win. Maybe not. I'm not sure. Okay, so most unsmooth segue ever as we transition into the Live Free FM segment of the show, Lessons on Liberty. So this week, I'm going to talk about Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and why they are so appealing right now to so many people. It seems like they're just blowing up in social media and in the alternative news venues. Like, these guys are getting so much attention right now. And I kind of wanted to examine that, take a closer look at it, and kind of figure out why. Why are Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump so appealing to so many people? A lot of people say because people are fed up with the establishment and people are fed up with the status quo. And these guys are like, you know, like wild cards or whatever. I don't know if that's completely it. I'm sure that plays a little bit of it or a little bit into it. But I think there's more to it. And so I'm going to talk about that this week on the Lessons in Liberty, Live Free FM section of the show. So as of this time, both of them are still in the race. I personally, this is probably just my own conspiratorial side, but I personally believe that they're there just to add some excitement to the race. I'm pretty certain that the race has already been handed over to Hillary Clinton, that she's been chosen by the people that actually choose our president. I'm pretty sure that Hillary is the one that's going to win, but I might be wrong. Just a prediction that I'm making or just kind of a gut feeling that I have. I feel like Bernie Sanders and Trump are there as just a way to kind of get the people re-energized, re-interested, reinvested in the political process, because a lot of people are just fed up with the political process and they see no hope in it. And they're right for that. There is no hope in the political process. I think that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are there just to take those disenfranchised people and kind of pull them back in. It's good marketing to have people like that there. But I wanted to talk about why I think they're doing so well. Like I said, the most common response is they're anti-establishment. I don't really believe they are. Like, Donald Trump, total crony capitalist. All for eminent domain, blatantly admits that he's bought off politicians. I don't think that Donald Trump is really anti-establishment in any way whatsoever. Bernie Sanders, also not anti-establishment. He doesn't talk about taking down the establishment. He wants to take over the establishment, and he wants to grow the establishment. He wants more establishment. So how can you advocate more establishment and then at the same time be considered anti-establishment? Neither one of them, in my opinion, are actually anti-establishment. And this is coming from somebody who is actually anti-establishment. So what's really driving their popularity? What's making these two candidates get so much buzz around their name? So I think it's a combination of two things. I think that number one, it's the use of the divide and conquer technique, which is just classic politics. I also think that it's kind of a blend of that and the use of demonizing a minority in order to win over a majority. And what I mean by that is both of these candidates have a target, a small section of the population that they blame all of the problems on, and they are uniting larger parts of the population against this small part of the population in order to lead the charge against these minorities. And so obviously with Trump, it's fear of Mexicans and fear of Muslims. And the classic rallying call, they're taking our jobs or they're going to rape our white women. Donald Trump really plays into that irrational fear he appeals to the fear of outsiders. He kind of exploits it, and he promises that by electing him, he'll bring some sort of solution. Classic example of the enemy at the gates conspiracy, totally taking advantage of the enemy at the gates conspiracy mindset. Bernie, on the other hand, does it a little bit differently. Bernie has his minority is the 1%, which is obviously a minority. It's a financial minority. Fear of the 1%. They're going to take over everything. They're going to privatize all the water, and they only care about profits, and totally driving home the us versus them mentality, the 99% versus the 1%. He exploits jealousy. He exploits people's economic ignorance. And he's a total example. His platform is a total example of the enemy above conspiracy. So here's the thing. Both candidates use the exact same tactics, just kind of slightly varied. Both of them use the Hegelian dialect of problem, reaction, solution. Problem, this minority is a threat to your lifestyle. Reaction, be afraid and desperate for a leader to save you from the threat. Solution, elect this politician who will grow government in order to solve the problem. Bernie wants more control over the economy, more taxes, and less choice for you. Trump promises a giant wall, increased surveillance, and less freedom of travel. Either way, Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, either way, the solution is more government and less freedom by using fear of a minority to drive their platform. This is Anarchopreneur. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
You're a busy podcaster, not a web designer, but you know, without a professional website to send your guests and listeners to, your podcast will not get the attention it deserves. Having a great website is crucial to the success of your podcast, but it can also be a major headache, not to mention a drain on your wallet. You need a service that's easy to use, gives you a great website, and hosts your podcast files all in one place. You need BlastPod from Podcast Blastoff. Far from just another WordPress platform, BlastPod was built from the ground up by podcasters for podcasters. BlastPod is your all-in-one podcasting solution that gives you the ability to podcast like the pros. Sign up now and get access to your BlastPod website today. Putting the power of podcasting into the hands of the people. PodcastBlastoff.com.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handycar's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show. I am your host with a hero complex, Nathan Frazier. You, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. What up, Free Market Squad? Welcome back to the second half of the Sunday, May 15th, 2016 episode. You can find more over at NathanFrazierShow.com. That is the new website if you want to get archives of this show. Pretty soon I'll have an RSS feed up there. Oh, just a heads up. I'm not exactly sure how all of this is going to work, but there might be a new RSS feed for this show. I don't know if I'll be able to transfer the RSS feed from livefreefm.com over to nathanfraziershow.com. So in the very near future, it's a very real possibility that your old RSS feed, if you're subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher or Podcast Addict or Podomatic. Oh, is that a, I don't know, Podcatcher, whatever way that you listen to the show, in the very near future, the RSS feed that you're used to getting the show from might no longer work because I'm switching over the podcast from livefreefm.com to nathanfrasershow.com. And so when that happens, I'll definitely give you guys a heads up as it's going to be, as I'll be making that transition. But when that happens, if you want to continue getting new episodes delivered to your smartphone or to your iPod or however you listen to the show, you will need to cancel that old RSS feed subscription and find the new one and update there. So once I have the new RSS feed up and working and available on iTunes and Stitcher and all those other applications, I will let you know about it. And yeah, so that's just kind of a fair warning as to what might be coming. I don't want you to not get your weekly Nathan Fraser fix. So yeah, what a conceited bastard. All right, so in the second half of the show, I promised that I was going to be talking about shortcuts to success and the problem with shortcuts to success as far as I see it. Now, again, everything that I talk about in this segment of the show, in the whole show in general, this is just my opinions about things, but I have opinions about things, and I let them fly on Anarchopreneurs because it is the Nathan Fraser Show, which means you're going to get Nathan Fraser's opinions about stuff. Sign of mental health illness when somebody refers to themselves in the third person. NathanFraserShow.com. All right. So first of all, I guess maybe we should start by the concept of this. Like in so many aspects of life, a lot of us are always looking for like the shortcuts to success. We're looking for the easy way to get what we want. And more often than not, those shortcuts actually end up either blowing up in our face or not working like we quite thought that they would, or actually being a waste of our time, being a waste of our energy, leading us off into rabbit holes. Who can say that they've never tried to follow a shortcut to success in a particular venue of life and didn't end up realizing after they had invested or wasted a bunch of time, energy, or money into this promised solution, then realized that they had wasted all of that time, energy, and money, and it wasn't really an investment. It was a waste. I know personally for myself, this has happened many times to me throughout my life, and I see these tactics being used, maybe not being used. I shouldn't like prescribe nefarious intent to people that I don't understand why they're doing the things that they're doing. But I do see people falling for things. I've fallen for these things, these shortcuts to success in different aspects of life. And at being a marketer, I know how appealing the shortcut process is to people. I know how much more likely somebody is to click on a link that says 3 simple steps to this end goal than somebody is to click on a link that says work your ass off and you can accomplish this. The goal can be the same, but if the initiation of the conversation is 3 simple steps versus work your ass off, 9 out of 10 people are going to click on the 3 simple steps headline. That's just the way that we're hardwired. And we just don't learn, maybe. But yeah, definitely, if you're running advertisements, very rarely does work your ass off to get this goal convert as well as 3 simple steps to get this goal. I guess the exception to this would be like some products like, what is it, that Insanity workout program, X something Insanity, where they just basically in the advertisement, they're like, look, this isn't just like a 5-minute workout to get 6-pack abs. This is a sweat until you almost pass out workout routine. And they make that very clear in the front of the advertisements. But for the most part, people don't click on those type of advertisements. And people don't chase those type of solutions for the most part. Again, I don't want to make blanket statements or prescribe this type of action to everybody on the planet. But for the most part, people are much more likely to chase shortcut solutions than hard work solutions. So we'll kind of go through a couple avenues or a couple venues where I see this playing itself out and obvious evidence that it doesn't work in the real world. So we're going to start off with voting and using the ballot box to force your desired change in society. Now, this is appealing, like, so, well, you know, I don't want to say so many people. I think like less than half of Americans still participate in the voting, in the voting fraud, but a lot of people still do. And a lot of people get like super fevered up about the whole voting process. And it's appealing to that percentage of the population, because all you have to do is show up and cast your vote. And that's like the extent of your responsibility for solving this problem. Don't like drug addiction? Show up and vote to make this drug illegal. Don't like Mexicans? Show up and vote and this guy will build a wall. Don't like the 1%? Show up and vote and this guy will put them all in gulags. It's like the perfect example of the shortcut to success. You don't like this problem? Just show up and write your name on this, or fill in the blank on this ballot and stick it in a box. And that's how problems get solved. No work at all. Just take the day off of work and get your I voted sticker. But the problem is, like, number one, voting to make things illegal just causes black markets. That doesn't solve the problem. Second, it doesn't even usually address the actual problem. It doesn't address the mindset or the underlying cause of the problem. It only addresses how we're going to punish people who continue to act in a way that we don't want them to act. So it doesn't actually solve the problem. It doesn't actually address the problem. It just addresses the punishment for the problem. Third, voting, it just causes more division. It pits people against each other. It causes a line and divides people into these two separate camps, and it pits them against each other in a contest of might makes right, or majority overrules the rights of the minority. And that's just insane. It's totally a horrible way to solve problems. And then the last point on voting is it allows stupid ideas to become enforceable laws. How the war on drugs is a classic example of this. Prohibition of alcohol in the 20s is a classic example of this. Jim Crow laws is a classic example of this, where the majority of people are stupid and they vote for a stupid law, and then people who are moral or people who are a little bit smarter than the majority now all of a sudden become outlaws. Now all of a sudden their actions become illegal and they can go to prison for doing the right thing. And, or even doing something that maybe isn't the right thing, but definitely was a less dangerous environment before that particular action became prohibited. People make the argument, well, you can't, especially like on the left, you can't outlaw abortions because people will still have abortions and they'll just be dangerous. They'll get them in back alleys with coat hangers. So that's why it's, even if you don't like abortion, you don't want to outlaw it because you just make it more dangerous if you outlaw it. Yeah, well, the same argument can be applied to guns. Maybe you don't like guns, but if you outlaw them, people are just going to be 3D printing them. So, and they're going to be less safe because they're not going to have Smith & Wesson or Ruger or Taurus, you know, doing a good job of making sure that the gun doesn't blow up in your hand. You're going to have Saturday night specials all over the streets. So this idea of using government, using the voting system to rid society of a problem, yeah, it's a shortcut to success, but it never works. It always blows up in your face. It's not feasible. It's not a good shortcut to follow. Another example of shortcuts to success, I think it was Murray Rothbard who first proposed this idea of, if you could push a button to end the state tomorrow, would you do it? And this is a highly debated thing amongst the libertarian type community. It's appealing because it promises the immediate change without having to do any of the actual groundwork at all. Just push a button and tomorrow the state is gone. But would that actually solve the problem? Because obviously, yeah, the state is at the root of a lot of societal problems, but would pushing a button and getting rid of the state actually solve all of those problems? I don't really think that it will. Again, it doesn't address the mindset of the masses that caused the problem in the first place. Also, it creates a power vacuum. If all of a sudden tomorrow there's no more politicians, there's still going to be that power vacuum. There's still going to be people looking for people to lead them, and they're not going to have broken free of coercive leadership. They're still going to legitimately believe in coercive leadership. So just getting rid of the state doesn't actually solve the problem. It's kind of like the solution of revolution. Yeah, you can kill all the corrupt leaders, but if you haven't cured the idiotic followers, you're just going to end up with new corrupt leaders. And we see this time and time again, revolution after revolution. That's why it's called a revolution, because it's a secular pattern. Leaders get too corrupt, people kill those leaders, and the next step immediately is to go out and find new leaders who then become corrupt and then get killed and then get replaced with new leaders. If you're not addressing the root of the problem, you're not going to solve the problem with a simple solution like push a button and end the state or pick up your guns and start a revolution. That sound clip is going to get taken out of context. You're going to find me on a YouTube video saying, pick up your guns and start a revolution. Oh, wait, I probably have already said that in some of my music back in the day. So, the next one, spanking kids and bullying your kids, talking to your kids in an authoritarian way in order to get compliance from your children. This is like so widespread in our society. I am not a parent. I was a kid though. That's one thing that we all have in common. We were all kids at one time. And if we are self-examining human beings, we can think back about some of the things that happened when we were kids, and we can reflect on them and how they molded us and what type of people they turned us into. Also, at least for the time being, I live in a house with a kid, with a single parent, and it gives me, certain instances give me time to reflect on parenting and what the response or what the result of different types of parenting lead to. So here's the thing. Spanking and bullying, and when I'm talking about bullying your kids, I'm talking about the because I said so or I'm going to give you something to cry about type of parenting. That's kind of what I consider bullying. I mean, if anybody else did that to your kids, you would definitely see it as bullying. But typically, if people do it to their own kids, they don't realize that they're being a bully. It's so hypocritical. Like, so many people are so quick to be like, don't you talk to my kids like that. And then behind closed doors, they talk to their kids the exact same way. It's kind of disgusting. But side tangent right there. Spend 5 minutes in your local Walmart and watch how some of the most horribly behaving children also have some of the parents with the most horrible parenting skills. And watch the way that these parents talk to their children and treat their children. And then watch the way these children treat each other and treat other people and treat their own parents. And it's hard to not come to the conclusion that that there is definitely a correlation and maybe even a causation going on there. So just a little bit of a side tangent. I'll get back back on course. So parenting by spanking, by using violence against you. I mean, just think about that. You're going to spank your kids. You're going to hit a child, like you're a grown ass man or a grown ass woman, and you're going to hit a little kid. Oh, it's with the open hand or it's with a spoon or whatever. Like, you're still hitting a child. I don't know. I just can't agree with that. I'm a pretty big guy. I just can't ever see any kind of situation that would justify hitting a little kid. I just can't see it. So that's just me. But here's the thing. In the long run, like, immediately you might get the response that you desire. You might get, you know, they might shut up. They might clean their room. They might do what you told them to do immediately. In the very short term time span, you might get what you wanted. But in the long run, hitting your kids and bullying your kids can have like very bad consequences. So in studies, they've shown that kids that are spanked, especially the more often that they're spanked as kids, they end up being more violent towards other kids at school. They also end up being more violent in later on in life. They tend to spank their own kids. They tend to more quickly resort to violence to solve problems. And I say this firsthand. My dad used to beat the crap out of us as kids. My dad used to get drunk and find any excuse to hit us, hit my mom, beat us all the time. And when I became a teenager, even before I became a teenager, I quickly learned, hey, if somebody's not doing something that you like or somebody's doing something that you don't like, kick the shit out of them. And that's how I solved my problems up until like my late 20s. And yeah, probably not the best way to solve problems. Also, they say that kids that get spanked typically have lower IQs on average. I don't know if this is true. I, at least according to the tests that I've taken, I have a pretty high IQ, and I got spanked pretty frequently as a kid, but that's what they say. Maybe I'd be super level genius if I wasn't hit as a kid. But they also say more likely to get involved with crime. If you spank your children, they're more likely to get involved with crime later on in life. And I can say I definitely had a, what, God, like a 10, 15 year, like crime spree. Thank God I'm not in prison, but I definitely did a lot of things in my youth that that now I'm not proud of. I don't brag about, but I probably wouldn't have done if I hadn't grown up in the environment that I grew up in. Also, more likely to solve problems with violence. Like I said, if that's what you're trained in, that's what you're modeling, that's what you see, as you're growing up, that, hey, mom and dad solve problems by using violence or resorting to intimidation. In your personal life, you're probably going to think it's okay to solve problems with violence because you're just modeling what was going on. And in society in general, if children, the argument is if children are brought up in violent households where parents use violence and threats to get their way, then you're going to beget a society full of people who think it's okay to use violence and threats of violence to get their way. Thus, a society where a state is just ripe to grow. Also, and this is kind of the flip side of the coin, when you teach your children that they need to do what you say just because you threaten them with violence or because you actually use violence on them or you use bullying tactics, you're kind of teaching your children that authority figures, you being the authority figure in the situation, but in general, authority figures have the right to treat them in a way that they know it's not okay to treat others. It kind of teaches your children to submit to abusive authority. If you're an abusive authority and you train your children that they have to submit to you, psychologically, subconsciously, you run the risk of training your children that they need to submit to abusive authority out in the real world as well. So, you know, I don't always agree with the Steph bots out there, but when it comes to like peaceful parenting as a way to fight statism, I kind of have to give them the benefit of the doubt on this particular issue. The next thing I wanted to talk about was diet pills, as far as shortcuts to success. Diet pills and get skinny quick diets. So appealing. I mean, you can't walk into the grocery store and walk through the checkout without seeing 15 different magazines aimed at, here's a quick three-step process to get skinny for this summer, to get into your bathing suit body. The appeal is kind of like get skinny without having to work out, or get skinny without having to actually eat healthy, especially when it comes to like diet pills. Without having to change your habits. But the problem is if you don't change your habits, as soon as you stop taking those diet pills, or as soon as you stop following the 1 week, give us 7 days and we'll take off 7 pounds. As soon as you stop following that program or stop popping those pills, you're probably going to gain back all of that weight, which, is not healthy and doesn't lend itself to long-term results. Also, on top of that, there's huge health risks involved. You don't want to be doing that to your body, those constant fluctuations. Remember FenFen? Maybe some of you guys are too young to remember FenFen, but it was like a huge diet pill, I think in the 80s, maybe early 90s, and then ended up having like giant health risks associated with it. it was kind of like one of the first times that I realized, hey, these diet pills actually do more damage than they actually solve a problem. So, and also addiction, like heavy cases of leading to methamphetamine addictions come from these pills. So all in all, the shortcut to success when it comes to being skinny doesn't have long-term benefits. And then this kind of leads me to the final point of what I wanted to do, which is like these three-step solutions sold to entrepreneurs. So there's a lot of like quick fix ideas out there for entrepreneurs, a lot of get rich quick schemes that are specifically geared for small business owners or entrepreneurial minded people. And these things are really appealing when you first start out, before you've kind of really grasped a knowledge of what works and what doesn't work. Anybody can throw a shiny object out at you, and it's really easy to get distracted. It's really easy to start chasing that shiny object. But that's the problem with most of these three-step quick fixes is most of them are nothing more than shiny objects. Most of them are just distractionary, and most of them are short-term solutions that won't actually solve the problem that you're trying to solve, won't actually get you to the success that you're trying to get to. And if you're in the middle of starting a business, or if you're about to start a business, or if you've just started a business, you're going to find out quick. You're going to start seeing, like we mentioned earlier, Facebook advertising and how advanced Facebook advertising is becoming, and how targeting or how good at targeting audiences you can get with Facebook ads. If you go to some of these websites and you get pixeled on these websites, you'll get some of these advertisements in your newsfeed. If you follow particular thought leaders, other people will target those thought leaders and try and introduce themselves to you through Facebook ads based off of the fact that you follow this guy who's actually legitimate. They say, well, hey, you follow this legitimate guy, why not try and introduce myself to you so that maybe you'll follow me as well? If you're starting out a business, you'll quickly start having your Facebook news feeds just completely inundated with all of these advertisements that are, in my opinion, shiny object syndrome type things, shortcuts to success that don't actually lead you there. You'll start seeing like one simple funnel tweak to boost your conversions, or 10 magic words to improve your sales copy, or headline templates that get clicks. And you'll see like so-and-so's perfect Facebook ads template. And one of the most common ones that I see out there is like 50 profitable niches to start in now and get rich tomorrow. Like these things are very, very appealing to especially like the newcomer entrepreneur or the person who's brand new to the idea of starting their own business or getting online, passive income. I'm brain farted there for a second. I should probably have better show notes so I don't have those things happen. But these things are very appealing to intro entrepreneurs. But here's the problem. All of them lead to short money. Even if you do get short-term success, it's short money. Real success takes hard work. There's not like a one-size-fits-all solution. There are no magic bullets when it comes to success in anything. When you take most of these shortcuts, you're going to end up failing in the long run. I just recently heard an interview with a lady that was talking about how she had auto-generated posts on her blog. She was trying to get more traffic to her blog, so she bought this program that would auto-generate posts for her. But the problem is when people would go and look at her posts, she might get short-term traffic, but people would know, hey, there's no personality. There's no getting to know the author. This is a robot posting this stuff. And her traffic started decreasing heavily. If you have like gimmicky headlines, if you use these 10 magic words or headline templates that get clicks, if you don't deliver on the other end of that headline, if you're just trying to use a gimmick headline to get clicks, people will be disappointed when they click, and they won't click the next time, and they won't share it with their friends. So if you constantly get caught in this chase what's hot this week, next week the cheese is going to move because that market got flooded, and you're just going to constantly be being, you know, trying to play catch up, which is not what I want for you. And here comes the bumper music, and I'm not done. which means if you want to hear the rest of this rant and you're listening to the live show on Sunday night, you're going to have to wait and download the archive from NathanFraserShow.com. Again, the new website is NathanFraserShow.com. I will continue right on the other side of this bumper music. Until next time, Free Market Squad.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
BYO boss. And I'm just going to pick up where I left off. So I was talking about chasing the shiny objects and chasing what's hot this week. And what's hot this week will not be hot next week because that market will get flooded by all the other people chasing what's hot this week. And what's working this week won't work next week. There's a great book called Who Moved My Cheese? That's all about this concept of if you find a profitable niche this week, next week it might not be profitable. And 2 weeks from now, it might actually be costing you money to be in that niche. So if you're a paper chaser, if you're somebody who's always chasing the cheese, you're going to constantly need to be moving from one spot to another. There's some knowledge in there. Obviously, if you put hard work into anything, it might be successful for a while and then new technology will come about and make it irrelevant, which means, yeah, obviously you're going to need to not be like these dinosaur companies that crumble when new technology comes out. So you definitely need to understand the importance of moving to where the cheese is moved. But at the same time, I don't know. I guess I don't know. I'm up in the air about it. I don't think it's a black and white situation. I think that there's a shade of gray there. And yes, you do need to be flexible, but also you don't just need to be chasing the cheese all the time. And if you're just chasing where somebody says, hey, the cheese is over here this week, and you go chase it down and everybody else does too, that cheese gets eaten really, really quickly. So I'm kind of more of the mind of put in some hard work. Don't just ask most recent cheese guru where you should be going. Maybe learn to develop your own sense of smell and look for cheese that way, if that makes any sense at all. So an example of what I'm talking about of just chasing the newest gimmick and the market getting flooded and then no longer being able to make money in that market is like superhero movies and TV shows. Now I'm a comic book reader. I love comic books, some comic books. I grew up reading comic books, and longtime listeners of the show know that I'm like a huge Ninja Turtles fan. Also Walking Dead. I love the Walking Dead comics. But that's besides the point. The real point of this is the explosion of superhero movies and superhero TV shows in the last like decade or so. I think most of this is probably a direct result of the X-Men movie, the popularity of the X-Men movie and the popularity of the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie. When those movies came out, they showed Hollywood that there was a definite solid market for that type of movie. And subsequently that market has been flooded. And at first it was a lot of people jumping into the market, delivering some decent quality content. But since then, a lot of that market has been taken over with just garbage, like the newest Batman versus Superman movie, which I haven't seen yet, but the response of it has been just atrocious. People say that I guess there's been mixed reviews, but most of my friends and most of the people that I trust on this say that the movie was just garbage. Apparently the new X-Men Apocalypse movie is just trash as well. As much as it pains me to say this, the last Ninja Turtles movie was pretty horrible. I was not super impressed by it. Do I like the fact that more and more comic book movies are being put out? I do like that. I think that it's great because every once in a while a gem comes out. The new Deadpool movie was pretty decent. The new Captain America Civil War movie apparently is pretty decent. The last Captain America movie, Winter Soldier, had a lot of great like libertarian themes in it and was a pretty solid movie to boot. So sometimes there's some good movies that come out, but the market is getting flooded and there's a lot of garbage coming out. Arrow, the TV show Arrow and the TV show of The Flash, kind of cashed in early on that niche of superhero TV shows And because they're trying to ride out a niche that maybe the writers of the show aren't as actually passionate about those characters and staying true to the storylines. You've seen some gimmicky stuff come in. You're seeing some soap opera stuff come in and making it not as appealing as it could be. And more fan service, more, you know, paper chasing and becoming more about just trying to cash in on a trend. Kind of like The Walking Dead, the original Walking Dead show. One of my favorite TV shows. I have, you know, I'll admit this. I do watch a couple of TV shows. The Walking Dead was an awesome TV show, adapted from an awesome comic. The new series of Walking Dead that's trying to cash in on the trend, I'm not as impressed by it, and I don't think that it's going to have the success that the original one had. So, what can you learn about all of this? I think that really the best thing to learn is when you just try and cash in on a trend, or when you just are more concerned with what's the quick way to get rich in this new market, you're going to have short-term success. It doesn't mean that there's no like viable shortcuts to success out there. There definitely are. I mean, it definitely makes sense to model people who have success and not make, you know, learn from their mistakes and learn from their successes and not repeat those same mistakes over and over again. It definitely makes sense to mentor under certain people. It definitely makes sense to model the steps that they took. But you need to be careful when doing so. And you need to also understand that just because it worked for somebody else or just because it worked for this particular market at this particular time doesn't mean that it'll work for a different market, or doesn't mean that it'll even work for that same market at a different time. I see on like Teespring, I follow people that do Teespring t-shirt accounts, and I'll see a t-shirt that just works like gangbusters for a week or two, and then somebody else tries to model a very similar t-shirt and market it to the same crowd thinking that they'll get the same results. But what worked 2 weeks ago for that particular crowd, everybody who was going to buy that t-shirt has already bought it, and they're not going to buy a knockoff of that same shirt because they already got the one that they wanted. And everybody who didn't buy it last time, maybe one or two of them might buy the new one that you put out, copying the template from the other guy, but you probably are not going to get the same results that the first person, the person that was first to market, got. So yeah, you just got to understand that like there are no, well, I don't want to say there are no shortcuts, but they're way less available than most people would like you to believe, especially the marketers who are out there selling these shortcuts, whether it be a diet pill or a way to fix society by buying into their political platform, or a way to increase your profits and revenue by buying into their new Facebook ads template program. Just because it works for them doesn't mean that it's going to work for you. And the more unbelievable, the less believable the solution is, the less you should believe that it'll actually work. The more it seems like it's too good to be true, the more likely it is that it is too good to be true. So yeah, you can model others. Yeah, you can model other people's templates, but be careful when doing so and understand that just because it worked for them doesn't mean it's going to work for you. Just because it worked last week doesn't mean that it'll work this week. The ninja, the quick and easy three-step processes, the what's hot this week. I guess this harkens back to, I heard a guy explain this really, really well. I'm going to give full credit to him. I don't know if he came up with this or not, but there's a email marketer that I listen to. His podcast is named Ben Settle, and he was talking about Indiana Jones and the movie where they had the Holy Grail, and how so many people, when they're stepping into marketing, they want to look for the bright, shiny object. When they walk into the room full of all the different grails, the first one they want to grab is the one that's, you know, a gold-plated cup with all kinds of gems embedded in it, and that they chase after all these bright, shiny objects. And the real one, the one that's going to actually lead you to success, is the plain old cup that looks like a carpenter would use it. That was kind of the message in that Indiana Jones scene. And it's true. It's true in the real world. Hard work on fundamental, foundational principles will always outperform chasing the shiny, bright, ninja objects that are out there, the ninja tactics, understanding the fundamentals of weight loss, understanding the fundamentals of good parenting, understanding the fundamentals of building a good business will always do better than just chasing the three-step get success quick programs that are out there. So that's kind of how I wanted to end this. The last message that the kind of takeaway that I want you guys to get from this show is, number one, hard work matters. Number two, quick money is short money. Same thing with success. Quick success is short success. And number three, the most valuable outcomes are worth the work it takes to achieve them. If you like this show, like I said, you can get more over at NathanFraserShow.com. Also, if you like this episode, you'll probably like being involved with our small but growing Facebook community, which can be found at Free Market Squad on Facebook if you want to find an easy way to get access. Plus, join my mailing list. Go over to freemarketsquad.com. Until next time, Free Market Squad, I am out of here. Faith in each other, not in authority. Hashtag BYOBoss, be your own boss. I'm out of here. Deuces. Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life. And membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.